What's up, guys? This is Rich Ting, and you're watching Hollywood Reel with Jay Menez.
Well, you know, it's been 10 years since we first met, and I've been totally impressed by the way your career has evolved through this time and how you've been able to navigate the challenges in your life. And, you know, you're a total rock star for that. Congrats.
I don't know about that last part, but I appreciate the support. And yeah, 10 years, man, that's crazy. Like, I can't believe it's been that long.
It has been. Well, let's look back a little bit. So, born in Los Angeles, fourth generation Asian American, high school, four sport varsity athlete, football, basketball, baseball, and track, college football at Yale University, JD MBA. You're a lawyer, martial artist, taekwondo, jeet kune do, and wing chun, and speaks six languages?
I don't know about six. I think it's five, and I would say I'm conversational, so I don't want to put out any fronts out there. But yeah, you know, right. I've always been interested in languages, so it's kind of like a little side niche I enjoy.
Yeah, well, you know, we haven't even gotten to your film and TV career, but, you know, you're quite the overachiever.
Ask my dad about that. I would want to see what he would say. He'd probably say, no, I'm not. He says probably the underachiever. But yeah, no, that's, God, you make me think, there's so many memories that go through my head when you kind of go off that list of things you just said. But
yeah, well, it's no doubt your dad, of course, you know, that's how we met. Mm-hmm. Well-regarded pro professional sports orthopedic surgeon. He's a guy who fixed my ACL.
And that's why I'm not an overachiever. Because I'm not a physician, I'm not a surgeon, I'm not in the medical field, so to speak. So.
Right, well, you know, in the Asian community, right?
It's, yeah.
You're a doctor, lawyer, or failure, right?
Yeah, exactly. So in our family, it's either you're a doctor or you're a failure. So there it is.
Yeah.
So if I'm not a doctor, well, guess what? But no, glad the knee's doing great. I always say, I think it's better to be a patient of my dad than to be his eldest son. You know? Because if I tore my ACL, he'd probably tell me to take some Advil and put some ice on it. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And that I'm fine. So, but no, all jokes aside, yeah, it's been a crazy ride, man. You know, I'm just fortunate to be sitting here with you, healthy, 2021. You know, all the weird stuff that's been going on, and yeah, I'm just blessed.
Yeah. Well, with a background like that, how'd you end up in entertainment?
So what happened was I actually came back to Los Angeles to take a job at a downtown law firm after graduating from law school and getting my MBA. Corporate law was kind of just the niche that I was kind of focused on at the time. However, Warner Brothers approached me for a potential feature film that they were doing at the same time I came back. And due to my relations and my connections to my uncle and my cousin, who are stunt coordinators in Hollywood and have been for decades, they encouraged me to at least try it. I was just a little fearful because I had worked the last 4 years doing this joint MBA JD program that what did I do all this work for? And now I'm going to cut ties with a law firm that I had worked so hard to get into. To my surprise, I just was like, hey, I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to be an open book. That's just kind of how I roll. And I told the partners, I said, hey, look, this is the situation. I've been approached. What would you guys like me to do? I kind of let them decide for me. And they said, oh my God, if we had this opportunity, we would take it, you know? And it was kind of a shocker in a great way because they basically said, look, go to Hollywood, right? Go to Hollywood, do your thing. If it fails, come back, you'll have a job. So with that, it was a no-brainer. I was like, done. Appreciate you guys. The door's always open for me here. I'm out. And that's actually how the ball started rolling for me as far as in the acting, professionally, I would say. You know, people always ask me like, oh, when did you start, you know, studying the craft and all that stuff? And, you know, being at a school like Yale where the drama and the theater program is so, so successful and produces so many, you know, well-known names that are killing Hollywood at this very moment, right? Writers, producers, actors, actresses, filmmakers, everything. You can't help but be influenced when you're there. You know, and that's what happened. Even though I was so focused on my core studies and my major and obviously full-time, you know, in college, when you're a student athlete in college, it's a full-time job. So I really didn't have time to experience things outside of my core major or football. I couldn't go abroad for, you know, and study in another country. I couldn't, you know, focus on minoring in theater. Like, I just, there was no time. But I was influenced and I was affected. So it wasn't until I got into graduate school when I was doing my joint JD MBA program that I didn't have football practice. I didn't have to spend 6-7 hours a day working out towards another goal. And so all of a sudden I had this abundance of time. And that's when I started studying at different theaters and really going, you know, getting into acting classes and really just pursuing the craft as a hobby. You know, I always say it was like my yoga during grad school. You know, people always like, oh, you did the joint program. How'd you have time? I had so much time. Like, it was great. I could work out. I could go to acting class. I could watch other people perform, you know. And that's kind of where the study of my craft began. I started a little late, but by no means did I ever think it was going to become my career or my full-time job in the future.
Yeah, and at that time, were you all in and kind of just left law behind, or was that, did you have one foot out the door still?
That's a great question. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that, actually. To be honest, the kind of person I am, I'm either all in or not. So I'm assuming at that crossroads in my life in that time period, I was all in. Because I'm either not moving or I'm in fifth gear, you know, and that's just kind of how I live. So looking back, you know, I'd been doing modeling for a while, which got me in front of the, you know, the still camera and whatnot. I was doing commercials and I just really wanted to focus on the theatrical side. And I knew that was going to take, you know, 150% to get to a level where not only was I being able to get in front of the right casting directors, but obviously booking as well. And then creating a, you know, a management agent behind me, you know, the whole team, the whole Rich Ting World team is what I call it, you know. So yeah, definitely I was all in.
The Rich Ting World.
Yeah. that's been my brand since a long time ago. And, you know, I just had these big goals when I was young that I was like, I want to create this world, you know, that's my world. And people always ask me, you know, all my social media platforms are all Rich Ting World, right? And people are like, how did you come up with that? I was like, you know, I just had tremendous confidence that, you know, when I was a youngster, that I'm gonna live in my world. I'm gonna create this platform for myself, whatever that may be. And Rich Ting World kind of fit the mold. So
yeah. Well, knowing you, Rich Ting World, at least today, is surely not just about Rich. What is the greater mission?
I always take it back to when I was a kid, right? And I remember as like a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, whatever, mixed Asian American, fourth generation Asian American kid, that I would turn on the TV and I would see Kung Fu with David Carradine. I remember being so confused. And I was like, is he supposed to be Chinese? He doesn't look Chinese, but why is he talking like that? This is weird. Change. And then I see Enter the Dragon, Bruce Lee, right? And I was like, whoa, he looks like me. Like, I can identify that, but he doesn't speak like me. But he's cool. Like, he's shredded. He's jacked. Like, he's kicking people here and there, right? He's got nunchucks, you know? He's got the bow. Like, I was like, what? And so that was a track just because I could somewhat identify with him, right? And then I would watch all these other movies. I would watch a show called Sidekicks with Ernie Reyes Jr., right? And I would see a young kid. And obviously I was younger than him at the time, but I was like, whoa, look at this young kid. And he's going around and people are picking on him. Like, people are picking on me at school and he's defending himself, you know, and he's living with his stepdad, you know, this cop, and just that whole world. Side note, I later graduated and got my first degree black belt from Ernie Reyes' Taekwondo. So that was like a side, like, cool little story, which, you know, I saw him on TV and I wanted to be like Ernie, you know, and then ended up being able to convince my mom to drive me to the South Bay when we were in the Bay Area to train at Ernie Reyes' West Coast Taekwondo. So side story. But, you know, my point was, is that I just never saw anyone as a kid that made me feel proud to be Asian American, that made me feel just good about myself. You know, especially in the time that I was growing up, there weren't Asian dads, there weren't Asian boyfriends, there weren't Asian firefighters, there weren't Asian cops. Like, the Asian guys were always these weirdos, you know? There's always like the scientific guy that was like, he wasn't just a normal guy that happened to work in forensics. He was like a weird guy, like a character guy. And I was like, why does he got to be like that? You know, I had all these weird questions as a youngster that I was like, I don't get it because I know who I am. Like, I grew up, my parents both speak English, period. That's it. I spoke English and I've learned all these languages. And it's not because I've heard them at the house. And so accents, literally Mandarin, Cantonese, Japanese, Korean, Vietnamese, whatever it was all foreign, you know? So as I progressed in this business and started becoming more visible on television and on the big screen, I started getting a lot of fan mail and a lot of just people coming up to me saying, hey, man, not only like a grown man saying it, but more importantly, like a kid, a young kid saying, hey, I love Bolo. He's so cool. Like, he's so strong. Like, I want to be like that. And I'm like, whoa. Like, it gets me emotional because that's what I wanted. You know, so when people go, what is your message? You know, to me, it's just, number one, what you see is what you get. Yeah, great. I drop into character, right? But at the core, it's still me. You know what I mean? So if I'm impacting these people, if I'm impacting kids, the younger generation, or even grown men that are my age or older, and they're just like, yo, thank you so much. That wasn't my mission. You know what I mean? It's a job like anyone else. I have to have a 9-to-5 in order to live. My 9-to-5 happens to be this. And if the result is impacting and influencing people in a positive way like this, then man, this is meant to be. I was meant to do this. So when you ask me that question, I can't say like, oh, I want to just inspire. Because I never wanted to inspire. Like that almost sounds arrogant if I say that. Like, oh, well, when I grow up, I want to inspire people. It's like, who are you, right? I just wanted to find something that I love to do, that I can pour my heart and soul into it, that doesn't feel like a job because I love what I do. And if it has this positive effect on people like that, then great. Then that's what I want to do. And I want to keep doing it. I want to keep providing an image. I want to keep providing a message or an emotion or some kind of connection to the younger generation. So when they do turn on the TV, they do go to a movie theater and they see me and whatever character I am, that inspires them to be better and to pursue that goal. Because I wanted to be an actor when I was a kid, but I couldn't be like, I want to be an actor like who? That was always the thing. Like, I never wanted to be Bruce Lee because to me, Bruce Lee, he was Bruce. Number one, he's a god. Number two, I just felt that he wasn't Asian American. Like, he had an accent when he spoke. You know what I mean? And all his films are very, you know, they were set in a period and in a backdrop of being in Hong Kong or China or something like that, right? Until The Green Hornet, obviously. But even that was filmed before I was born. So I just didn't have a connection with the contemporary. You know what I mean? So now it's like, you know, it's 2021 and a kid that's in maybe elementary school that's maybe getting bullied a little. Maybe his parents forget to turn off Warrior one night when they're watching it and he sees my character, you know, and he's like, wow, that's a strong character, you know? And somehow, weird way, it impacts him so that he feels better going to school and facing adversity the next day maybe, you know? That's a long answer. But that's why it's a hard question to answer, because there's not one word or one sentence that can sum that up.
Yeah, it's perfect. And do you feel like you're successful?
Oh, man. Yes, because I've had certain goals for myself. And up to this day, I've not only surpassed those goals, but I've succeeded those goals a while back. You know, and like I said, those goals were number one, playing Division I college football. Number two, going to some type of grad school. And number three, which was such a fantasy, would be to be in a Hollywood film. So to me, those were the goals. Like, I always told my mom, I was like, after I did my first Hollywood feature, I was like, I'm done, you know? And then she's like, well, how are you going to live now? You know, did you make enough? I was like, no, I didn't make enough. But, you know, but as far as from a personal goals, you know, standpoint, that was my kind of thing. Those were the goals. And I've already succeeded in those goals. So when you ask me, do I feel successful? Yes. But that may mean something different to someone else.
Right. You
know what I mean? So I don't want to get it twisted in that regards, but yeah, totally.
I think if you're doing something that you love, something that you would do, regardless of the money, and especially if you're making an impact at the same time, how could you not call that success?
I 100% agree with that.
Right?
Yeah. I think too many people associate success with a dollar sign or a figure. The first part of what you just said is so true. You know, I remember being at Yale, 18 years old, and classmates and friends of mine and roommates of mine, they would just be like, oh, by this summer, I want to intern at Goldman Sachs. By next summer, I want to be consulting with this firm. You know, when I graduate, I want to do this. So by the time I'm 22, I'm on my way to VP of this floor at JP Morgan, you know? And I'm like, I don't know what Spanish to take right now. Mm-hmm. Do I take level one, intermediate? You know what I mean? That's where I was. So it was really intimidating. And I kept having this, it stressed me out for years that I didn't know what I wanted to do. Mm. And so when you say to find something you love to do, that's, I think, the key. Because a lot of people may find it earlier, and that's great, but you need to find it. And I found it finally. After years of academics, I found it, you know, and it was in the artistic world, right? So, but, you know, everything's meant to be. But yeah, man, great question. No one's ever asked me that one either.
Well, good. I like hitting those kinds of
questions. Yeah, that's why you're making me stop and pause and think. So, no, this is great.
Well, there's some tissues there.
Perfect.
Finding your passion seems to be something that really troubles young people these days, mm-hmm. especially coming out of college, because they have a path, maybe something that their parents kind of pushed them in that direction, but they're not really sure about it. And I think people stress out about that a lot. Mm-hmm. I think you found it early. I found it much later.
Really?
I found it much later. Well, you know me. I've been through a lot of different careers, very different careers. It's not like different jobs in business or something like that.
Yep.
Very, very different. And I think that if you don't know what it is, I think you could just commit yourself in your 20s or your earlier years and just try a bunch of stuff until something vibes with you. You know, I think that's the way that we find our passion.
I think you're right. I think it's obviously easier said than done. You know, we were talking about this a little earlier off camera, but I think the problem is a lot of people get kind of trapped in a niche. You know, they get cornered because they think they should be doing this because this is what worked maybe for their parents, or this is what worked for their older sibling, and this is what you should be doing than what you really want to be doing. You know, and you know, people bring up the whole, oh, it's Asian parents pushing you to, like you said, to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. You know, I think it's universal, to be honest, you know, because obviously parents care about their kids and they want them to be successful and whatever that means, right, in their worlds. But when you say it like that, I guess I did find it earlier than you. You know what I mean? I never thought of it like that. You're the first guy, so there you go. I'll be like, actually, I found it early because Jay found it late. So that makes me, you know, younger in that aspect. So, but yeah, I think, like, you know, like we were just talking about, it's so much more easier said than done, you know, because when you're in your 20s and you just graduate from college, you don't want to hear someone say, you need to do this. Mm-hmm. Whatever that may be. That may be like, hey, you need to have 5 jobs. You know, that's not saying, hey, you need to go to grad school. No, I'm saying you need to have 5 job experience because they may end up bartending somewhere and just love being there. You know, being around young people and in that environment, that vibe, you know, and that energy, and they may love it. And they may be in Vegas and they may be making thousands of dollars, you know, just bartending and, you know, living a great life. And someone's going to, you should experience something else. They're not going to want to say, oh yeah, let me do that. You know what I mean? So I think it takes a very mature, ambitious 20-something year old to kind of have the courage, you know, and to be brave enough to kind of try different things, mm-hmm. you know, because once you try something else and it works, and you're like, oh yeah, I knew it all the time, right? Because it's all hindsight then, right? But I think a lot of successful people had the courage, you know, to try different things. So by the time they're in their 30s, they've already narrowed it down. Because I've seen so many people that I know personally that, you know, they did the right thing. They went to med school or whatever. You know, they did their residency. They get out. They do a fellowship. You know, then all of a sudden they're in private practice, and now they're in their early 30s, and now they get married, they have a family, and then by the end of, you know, late 30s, they're kind of like questioning, mm-hmm. is this really what I want to do? But by then you have dependents, right? You have a whole different life that you had when you were in your 20s. So I think that's where I believe in a higher being. I believe in a universal power, and, you know, just, I'm not very religious, but I do believe that, you know, I had a path, and I had a purpose in what I had to do to get to where I am right now. And that was to be an actor, you know, because I took so many left and right turns along the way. And it's so ironic because I'm born and raised in LA. Yet when I came back to LA as an actor, I felt like a foreigner. You know, people are like, oh, but you're from LA. I'm like, what does that mean? Like, I still got to wait in line. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, I had no idea what they meant by that. People are like, oh, but you're from LA. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, but I don't know what a headshot is. You know what I mean? Like, where do I get a headshot? You know, like, where do I get an agent? I don't know. You know, where's a good acting studio to join? You know, so that's where I really, you know, felt out of the box. But then because I think I did so many things early on, it helped bring that maturity out where I was fearless. Mm. And I think that's one of those characteristics you need to have. It's not recklessness, it's fearless, you know? And as long as you believe in yourself and maybe what this universe's plan is for you, you know, then hopefully that could help you be less fearful of things that you may be kind of reluctant to do, so to speak.
Yeah. And again, I think you developed a lot of mental habits early on, perhaps as a result of your parents or your upbringing or your, you know, the competitive sports that you played that you were in high school. Let me run an idea by you and see what you think about this. You had pointed out that a lot of the kids that you're coming up with, their ambitions were around material things and titles and money, right? I always say that it really starts with inner game, your mental habits. Mm-hmm. And once you can establish that mastery over your mind, mm-hmm. then the external success comes much easier.
Yes.
You know, like you're talking about, the tenaciousness, the resilience,
yes.
the drive, and that belief in yourself that you can do it.
Yes.
Because I think that holds a lot of people back. Even yes. if they find out, take the doctor, for example. And I know a lot of doctors who wish they weren't doctors.
Yeah.
They're unhappy now.
Yeah.
But like you said, they're stuck. They have responsibilities and bills
yep.
and a mortgage and all kind and a family.
Yeah.
So they're kind of stuck. And I know a couple that have tried to move out of it. And their mm-hmm. biggest hurdle is the belief in themselves that they can actually pull it off.
Yeah. Completely agree. Clarification. It wasn't until I got to the Ivy League schools, being at Yale, that I was around this type of different mentality of students, you know, that I had never been around before. Mm. You know, people really don't understand, unless you went to an Ivy League, people don't really understand the type of kids that go, especially at 18. Like, I think back when I was 18, I was like, God, I was so young. You know what I mean? I'm so thankful I survived. I made the right decisions, you know, because I was a completely different person at the age of 18. But then that's where being around all these students and friends at Yale and these teammates who are just so driven and so conscious about different things that I was never even conscious about really helped impact me, you know. My high school is a different story. You know, I came from a different diverse background, and to be honest, a lot of the mentality in the high school was just to survive, honestly. It was about college, but it was just like I just, you know, friends of mine were caught up in certain gang situations or whatnot and very urban environment in San Francisco. So it was more about just kind of surviving. Mm. That's where the whole Yale thing was like a complete 180. Because that went, you know, at Yale, you were already surviving. Right? We're there. Now it's about really surviving in like the upper, you know, echelon of society and really being financially successful, right? Just a clarification, because I heard you say that and I was like, oh God, that's right. That was only at Yale and that's what woke me up a little bit, you know. But yeah, I just think, you know, again, you get caught in this niche, and I think it's like anything else in life. You know, I remember like when I was a kid, my parents would take me like snowboarding and stuff. You know, and when you're a kid, you're shorter, right? Obviously. So the force of gravity is less, you know. And I remember my dad always saying, you know, we're gonna teach you these things as a kid so that you learn it now, so that when you're older, you don't have to do it. And you don't have to learn how to do it, because it's just gonna get harder. That's what he always told me. Right. So with your example of, you know, of your doctor friend family trying to do something later in life after they've had a career, had a family, I think anything later in life is just more difficult to do. You know what I mean? So whatever transition, whether, can you imagine trying to learn how to like snowboard at the age of 50? You know what I mean? Like you're taller, you're stiffer, you know, I think you're more fragile probably than if you're like 12, you know?
Of course.
Like that fall is going to be bigger. You know what I mean? And you're not as limber. So, you know, that's what popped into my head when you talked about this, you know, this doctor fan that's trying to make a transition, but they can't because it's the belief, you know? And I have to give credit to my parents because, you know, unknowingly to me growing up, I just did what they said. So I really believe they are responsible for the core values that I have to this day, you know, which was basically be accountable, be responsible, and be a good person, you know, and that applies to athletics and academics. And later it applies to life. You know, people always, one stigma that just popped in my head that I can't stand is, you know, people always say like, oh, I got fired from this job. I dropped out of this, right? I'm going to go to Hollywood. It's like, what does that mean? You know what I mean? The people in Hollywood not need to wake up and be accountable and you know what I mean? So when people ask me all the time, like, you went to Yale, you're a lawyer, you got your MBA, like, do you think that was a waste? Because you're an actor now. And that's really offensive to me because I'm like, what? I'm always so confused because I always believe I'm able to be an actor in this crazy business of Hollywood because I have the principles and the background to allow me to be successful in this arena. We have to wake up. We have to memorize. We have to prep. I mean, I actually think being an actor is harder than being a lawyer, being a corporate guy, being a physician, because we're alone to begin with. It's a solo job. Granted, you get on a show and you're with a cast and it's more, but the prep and the grind is very solo. So what drives someone like that? And that comes from their upbringing and their core values, you know? I had to wake up for a test. I had to study for the test, right? I got to be on set tomorrow at 5 a.m. with everything memorized, with all my context, my backstory, my character, because millions of dollars are being spent tomorrow to hire a crew and other actors to be on Netflix, to be on Amazon Prime, right? To be on network television. We're not messing around here, you know? So that's why I always have this weird vibe, and this weird feeling. People are like, I failed at everything. I'm going to go to Hollywood. I'm going to try Hollywood out. Well, if you failed before Hollywood, you're probably going to fail in Hollywood. I mean, there are exceptions. There are American Idols. Okay, don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying, like, I just always feel weird when people make that comparison to me because it wasn't a waste. It was all preparation, intellectually, academically, accountability. You know what I mean? Like, I will be there tomorrow. I will have my lines memorized. And I will be the best version of that character tomorrow. And your investment in me as a producer, as a writer, as a showrunner, as a network, as a studio, you will not lose. That's how I approach every project.
And like you said, you had the background. Every actor comes to the craft with a background. Mm-hmm. They've got a unique set of experiences and education and just life situations that can inform a character, mm-hmm. even. And the fact that you were able to accomplish so much at such a high level before Hollywood, those skills that you learned, that discipline, like you said, and that sense of responsibility really served you in your career later on and it gave you a great base for coming in to this industry. And look where you are now. That's why you're so successful, however you want to count it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that. It's a lot to take in. But yeah, you know, it's funny because you're 100% right that my disciplines, my parents, even the martial arts, you know, it's a lot of structure, you know, and you're allowed to live within that structure, but it's good structure. You know, it gives you a really good foundation, you know. You know, playing Pop Warner football at the age of 8, you know, with that same, I wore the same helmet when I was 8 years old that I did when I was 20 at Yale, okay? I had a big head when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
So imagine an 8-year-old running around with the same amount of equipment on, right? And coaches are yelling at you, you know, and pushing you and, you know, you're crying, you got dirt in your face. You know, you're 8 years old and some guy's coming at you trying to hit you, right? It's that toughness, that mental toughness, that physical toughness, and then that discipline to listen to your coach. You know, to do what he says, you know, to bow in to the martial arts studio, to bow out when you leave the mat. You know what I mean? All these things, and to go home and to have these, you know, parentals give you this structure where this is your world. This is what we expect of you. And this is what you need to do, because this is what we want you to do for you, because it's in your best interest, right? So you take all that. So it's like decades of training. It's decades of discipline. It's decades of the same routine. And then you get into Hollywood. And you know what you have to do? You have to keep a lot of those. Like I said, you have to be on time. You have to have your lines memorized. You have to be accountable to your crew and cast and director. But as an artist, you have to lose all that. Because I remember my first acting coach, I was up on stage and I'm sitting like this and I'm ready for like my critique. She's like, look at you. She's like, you are so stiff. And I'm like, huh? She's like, why are you sitting so straight up? And I'm like, because this is what I'm supposed to do. She says who? Right? And I was like, oh. So I kind of just like lean back. She's like, there. How nice is that? And it kind of, you know, a lot of people may not get that, but to me, it struck a chord, which is, you know, to play these characters, to play. That's what we have to do. We have to play. You can't play tight. You got to be, you know, as I use this word, I said, you got to be gooey. You know, you got to be able to like get into the character. You got to be able to break your face up. You know, martial arts is not that. Martial arts is form, technique, you know, chamber, recoil, you know, everything, breathing, right? And that's how I've been raised. This acting thing, this artistic world, you got to lose that. You got to just live. You got to play. You got to get nasty. You got to get gooey, is what I say, you know? So it's weird because, and but at the same time, why am I open to that? It's because I'm a student. I've been a student since I was born. So now I get into this craft, you know, decades ago. And I didn't resent it. I didn't fight it. I absorbed it. And I see a lot of, you know, a lot of friends of mine, they kind of fight it a little bit because they're like, no, this is what I want to do. You know, but for me, I'm just indoctrinated to just kind of absorb. And someone goes, I always like to say, because I've been criticized athletically my whole life, you know, by coaches and by trainers and whatnot. So, you know, that's another thing that you kind of have to have a little bit thick skin about in this business. You have to be open to criticism, you know? So, and that's what I've always thought, you know, the best way to succeed in Hollywood, you really have to be a sponge. You really do.
Yeah. Would you say that approaching it with a beginner mentality always is a key to succeeding?
I think so, because, you know, with the beginner mentality, I think that's when you're the most open-minded, open everything, you know? I think that's why, you know, when I see kids that are acting, it's like so crazy to me in a good way, because they're so young, they're so innocent, you know? And you tell them, hey, do that. Okay. You know, and they do that. You know, where as you get older, we create these walls, we get attitude, we get ego, you know, we got pride. Right, we have all these weird things, right, that make us who we are, and you got
irrational fears.
Yeah, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's a lot of it's garbage. It's like throw it away, man. Like relax, you know. And but I understand because I've been through it, you know, where another grown adult is telling me that I'm doing something completely wrong and what's wrong with you, you know. But I said because I've been coached my whole life, I'm open to criticism. I'm open to be directed. I love being directed, honestly. If you don't like what I'm doing, tell me. Let's get it right. You know, I'm not stubborn in that. I'm stubborn about giving me feedback and criticism. I'm not stubborn that I'm not going to change for you. You know what I mean? Especially if you're directing me, because I trust you, because you're on that side of the camera. Okay? And if you want me to look left, I'll look left. Like, it's fine. You know what I mean? So that I just think the beginner mentality is so fresh, you know, and it's like putty. You can just mold, you know, and as time goes, that putty starts to harden. You know, and then that's, you get that friction and that conflict. And I mean, that's why I always say I approach every project theatrically as if it's my first and as if it's my last of my life. I come in with that same mentality I did in my first job, and I leave it thinking, if this was my last gig, can I walk away from it now? And that's actually kept me safe. So, but that's Rich Ting's mentality. You know what I mean? So I don't know how it works for other people, but that's just kind of, that keeps me in my lane. You know, people always stay in your lane. That keeps me in my lane, that mentality. It sounds simple, but it actually is very impactful.
Yeah, that's good. So how do you stay gooey? Are there any tips, tactics?
One, you got to be open to criticism. You got to be open to coaching. You know, you got to be open to taking direction. And you have to have trust. I think that's the big word. You have to trust yourself. You have to also trust the people that are telling you this. I'm a preparation freak. So by the time I show up on a show, on a set, I have done the most preparation. I am the hardest worker. Dwayne Johnson says he's the hardest worker in the room. He may be bigger than me, but I would like to compete with him as far as working hard. Because I take pride in that. You know, I'm going to be the most prepared actor on set. I'm going to come in with the most, just whatever it is, whether it's research, physical prep, mental prep, emotional prep. Because of that, I trust my process so that when I show up, I'm not scared. And if you tell me as a director or a producer behind the camera, Rich, can you give me a note? Can you do this adjustment for us? Of course I can do it because I know I can because I've done the prep, but I also know because I'm here because of you. And obviously this is your product as well as mine. And we both want the end goal, which is a great product. So I'm going to trust you, you know? And I think that's where there's a gray area a lot. Because I think when people don't trust people behind the camera and then they don't trust themselves, that's where it gets messy, you know? So to stay gooey is what I say. That basically it's synonymous with being flexible and moldable and coachable. I think you have to trust yourself. You have to trust the process. You have to trust everyone on set behind, because they're all rooting for you. They really are. You're there. You got the job. Do what they say.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Even in the audition room, I feel that casting agents, they want to find that person. So they got to be rooting for
you. Oh, definitely. You know, there's all these misconceptions about casting and, you know, like this casting director doesn't like me. Or, you know, here's the thing. Before COVID, right? Everyone wants to go home at 5, right? So if they can find the guy at 10 a.m., guess what? The show that they're casting for loves them. They love you, the talent, because you came in at 10 and just made the rest of the day easy. You know what I mean? So they're rooting for you. And guess what? If you're castable, then they're probably bringing you in for something else. You know? And then, I mean, if you're castable and do a great job on the project, then they're like, we can definitely bring them in again, you know? But yeah, I being in this, it took me a while to kind of understand casting because it's such a weird, people just think, actor, gig. They don't understand this middle section, which is a significant part of this whole process called casting, right? Because they're like this hub, you know, they're getting requests from the directors, from the showrunners, from the producers, and then now they got to reach out and find talent, right? So they're just getting, there's like this dump box, right? And that's why, like, I respect casting because they go through so much behind the scenes work. Like, they really do. And I feel sorry for them sometimes because they go through a lot of behind the scenes work. But at the end of the day, I've definitely proven to myself that they're rooting for you. They're rooting for you in the room. They want you to be the guy or the girl, you know? They're not going to bring in 20 people and be like, I think we'll get one. Like, they want to bring in 5 and say, maybe we'll have 3 out of the 5. And then we'll leave it up to the, you know, the show to find out exactly which one of the 3 they want. So,
what's your take on competition as an actor?
I mean, it's like anything else in my life. I'm a competitor by nature. I love to compete. That's just something that was installed at a young age because of athletics. I rise to the occasion when it becomes competitive. I think I've always had this mentality. I always want to be a big fish in a big pond. I never want to be a big fish in a small pond. And that's just come strictly from my athletic upbringing. I'm not intimidated. Maybe some circumstances involving weapons outside the acting world may be a little intimidating, but in foreign countries, like we discussed earlier. But I'm a competitor. I love to compete. It keeps the fire going. I love it. I'm always down for it. You know, my whole thing is if you're stuck between 2 actors for a show, let's go. Let's go. Let's ride and the best guy wins. And that's cool. Then I can move on because I did my best. And if it wasn't the best, then the other guy deserves it.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I bring that with just, that's life, you know, and I don't talk about it a lot. But I mean, I compete with myself. I'm my biggest competitor. That may sound cliche, but it's so true. because, you know, I watched, you know, again, athletics has done so many wonders for me because, you know, I started watching film. And I mean film, like, you know, watching game film, practice film, going over the opponent's film, going over my film at the age of 8. Like, my dad had me in the, when I was 8 years old, you know, my mom would videotape all of our stuff, my brothers included. Like, she would get every basketball, football, baseball, track, martial arts, she would videotape everything. We go home right after the game, practice, and we're watching tape, we're watching film. What can I do better? Why did I do that? Rewind it again. Go back again. You know, so to me, when I perform in front of the camera now, I'm always critical. I'm always going back. And I'm always trying to, but see, then it's weird because I try to think, where was I in that character in that moment in 2019, in 2018, in 2021? What was going on in my life that made me make that choice? And that's what I like, because I don't believe there's bad choices as long as you can justify it. There's bad plays. You know, I throw an interception. Yeah, I'm going to get it. My dad's going to kill me for that when we get home. You know what I mean? But, you know, in the acting world, because it's so creative and you can be so original, that's where I love, because in some areas, like, I feel like you can't make a mistake. Because if you believe in the character, you believe in what you're doing at that moment, and you live moment to moment, and you're that real person, there are no bad decisions. But I'm still critical. So I bring that competitiveness, everything. It's just who I am.
Excellent. Coming up, where was the biggest hurdle you encountered in growing your acting career?
I originally started because of my family connections with the stunt world in Hollywood, and, you know, on the stunt side of things. And I really used that to educate myself to hopefully have a career on the theatrical, on the actor side of it. You know, people always think stunts and actors, and no, they're like oranges and apples. The stunt department doesn't get enough credit. They are first on set, last to leave. They're protecting us actors. They're protecting the crew. They're protecting everyone all the time. And they're the reason why movies are great. Because if we don't have the guy blowing up, or we don't have the guy getting shot, or we don't have the guy flying out of a car, then we don't have a movie. So real quick, respect to the stunt department. I think it's the most humbling way to come into this industry, because you see that side of it, you know, and then you can cross over to the actor side like I did, right? I'm grateful for that foundation. However, in crossing over to the acting side, I think at the time that I decided to commit fully to leaving the stunt world and focusing only on the acting, I just had this really weird gut feeling. This one day, I was on the 101, like right over here, and I was stuck in traffic, typical. And it was weird. I just was like, you know what? If Hollywood wants an Asian actor for their next feature film, for their next HBO show, I don't know where this thought came from. It just appeared in my head. I said, they're not going to look in their backyard. They're going to go overseas, because they're going to think we need an Asian actor from Asia. There's no Asian actors from LA, you know? And again, this was back in the day. This is not 2021. This is decades ago. And I just had this like realization. I was like, okay, I got to go to Asia. I'm going to go to Asia. I'm going to work. I'm going to train and work, meaning I'm going to get paid to do film and TV. At the same time, it's going to be my training to come back to Hollywood. And I just committed to that thought in traffic. I was like, okay, I'm going to Asia, and then I'm going to come back home. And then that's when it's going to start. That was the biggest challenge for me, because I wasn't getting the auditions here. I wasn't getting the attention that I wanted. It's like the chicken or the egg, right? It's like, oh, I want to be a guest star, or I want to be a recurring. How do you get that? Well, you got to build up your credits. Well, how do I get those credits? Well, you got to get called in for casting. Well, how do you call them for casting? There has to be roles for Asian guys that look like me or are me. See, now I love it just because of the evolution of Asians on film, you know, obviously Asian Americans on film, that we just have more opportunity. Like half the stuff I book, it's not for an Asian guy, you know, but that's now. This is back then when it was like, no, like it's either going to be a white dude, a black dude, or a Latin guy. Like Asian? No, we don't know, right? So it's kind of like, I get chicken or the egg. How do you get those opportunities if you're not getting those opportunities, right? So that was like the hardest decision. And again, all these questions come back together. I was in my 20s. I was like, okay, I got to take a chance. I got to have the courage to go to Asia. I'm not from Asia. My ancestors are. I'm from LA. My mom was born in LA. My dad was born in the Bay. Like, we're from California, okay? I got to go to Asia. My parents haven't even really been to Asia, right? So I was like, I just had this courage all of a sudden. I'm like, I'm going to Asia. Where? I don't know. But wherever I can, I'm going. And that was, to me, the hardest thing because I was like, if Hollywood is not going to provide me with these opportunities, and at the time, I was too immature in the industry to, like, make my own film, right? Or to, like, create my own role or create my own short and then pitch it and do all that stuff.
Well, back then, it wasn't as easy.
No way.
The technology wasn't as evolved.
No, it was definitely not easy back then. So that's probably the hardest time for me because once I committed to, okay, I'm going to somehow get to Asia, I just manifested that and it happened. And the craziest thing is, like, we're going to skip over a lot of stuff right now. What happens is I end up going to Southeast Asia to do a feature film that ended up becoming a 2-year commitment, which then helped me get onto another TV show in Asia at the same time. I think I had a month left before I wrapped. I got a call, and I'm not going to, out of respect for his privacy, by a top, how do I say this without exposing him? I got an email from a very influential manager / agent / president that said somehow he had come across my work and was very interested in me. And I was like, okay. Meanwhile, you know, this is like probably 3 years after I have this epiphany on the 101, right? And I'm in Southeast Asia going, I don't know what I'm doing here, right? I'm doing phenomenal work. This is a great life experience, but what am I really doing, right? And then I get this email out the blue with 1 month to go. He's like, when are you going to come back? I said, I wrap in a month. He's like, great. Meet me in Santa Monica at my office, my headquarters. I'm like, cool. And then he's like, hey, man, quick, long story short, I love your work. Think you have potential. I'm like, okay. Like, his name, if I said the name, everyone would be like, of course, you know, like, like I said. So I already knew that I was in good hands. And he's like, look, I just want to help you out. And he's like, I love your work. I for some reason, I have a connection with you. And let's just see. And he helped me get my first Hollywood feature film, which then launched me into the Hollywood scene, which also marked the last checkoff on my goals of how to be successful in my world, right? So all this happened within 2 months after I'd wrapped being in Asia. So somehow I was like, I got to go to Asia so I can come back home. That was out there in the universe and it happened. And I still don't believe it to this day because, you know, I was young and dreaming big and it started happening. And then actually after that first feature film in Hollywood, I actually had an opportunity to go work in Korea. So then I felt like it was my second time going back to Asia, and work in Korea helped me again come back to LA as well. But I was, by that time I was doing both. So I was working in Hollywood and I was also working in Korea. But that whole original mentality of going to Asia first so I can come back home, you know, just because they wouldn't look in their backyard, you know. And I get it. You know, there's dollar signs associated with having fans overseas and, you know, how many followers you have and all that stuff. I get that. I get the political side of it and the money side of it. But I just felt like if I walked into any big, if I walked into the guy's office who ended up helping me then as Rich Ting in that era, like I'm fourth generation Asian American, born and raised in LA, I would love to audition. There would have been no chance. Something happened when I went to Asia that, whether he saw, you know, he saw footage or whatever, that he was like, who is this kid? And oh my God, he's from LA. Get him here. And so that's where, I mean, that's, I haven't really told this story before, but that's kind of how it started. And that also was probably the hardest time of my career because I didn't know if there was a light on the other side. I was in the jungles of like Northern Vietnam, sitting on a plastic red stool as my chair, as my Hollywood chair, in like 90% humidity, probably 95 degrees hot.
Did it have your name on it?
It did not have my name on it. And they had a poor assistant guy trying to like fan me. And I was just like, stop. That you're not doing anything and you're just burning calories that you need to save, you know? And I remember being there, just sitting in this jungle, supposedly where Ho Chi Minh died. That's how north we were. And that's how rural we were.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm trying to be an actor in Hollywood. I don't know what I'm doing here, you know? But I had this tremendous self-belief and self-confidence that I was there for a reason.
You had talked earlier about the belief in higher being, that sort of thing. And because it's really interesting, the timing of how all this came about.
Yes.
It's very serendipitous.
Yes.
Many will say that it was manifested while, whether intentional or not. Mm-hmm. Was that intentional for you?
God, that's such a great question again. I'm going to say this a bunch of times today. Can I give you an example?
Sure.
Okay, so one of my recent shows, Warrior, on HBO Max, I play the character of Bolo.
Love that show.
Thank you. And obviously, the original treatment was from Bruce Lee, and his daughter, Shannon Lee, was the one who was able to bring it to Justin Lin and Jonathan Tropper and Danielle Woodrow to eventually make this show called Warrior. Bruce had written it decades before I was born. It had sat on a shelf in his garage for years. It was in a garage when Justin Lin called Shannon and said, "Hey, I remember that there might be something called The Warrior or something that your dad did an original treatment for back in the 70s. Do you still have it?" She's like, "Yeah, I've had it this whole time." While that conversation is going on, I don't know where I'm at in my life, but I'm doing something, working in the business, training, you know, on my path. And a lot of people don't understand that, you know, we're so raised. I think, you know, mainstream America or mainstream whatever is raised that, you know, we have a test on Friday. We study Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, maybe. Or maybe you just study Thursday and you cram, right? And you take the test and you pass or you fail and you move on. That's usually life, you know? Graduate high school, you're going to go to college. You're going to go to junior college, whatever. You're going to go to college. Or you go to work. Done. In the film industry, it doesn't work like that. What you do today doesn't show result tomorrow or anywhere near the next day, okay? It takes years sometimes. So my point to this is Bruce Lee wrote this treatment, had a history of it. It got rejected from the studios back in the 70s. So it sat on a wall. He passes. All his stuff gets forwarded to his kids. Brandon passes. Shannon ends up with it. Shannon holds on to it. Again, this is from me being around Shannon Lee and Jonathan Tropper and Justin Lin and hearing this. So if I'm incorrect, I apologize. But I'm firsthand hearsay here, okay? And it's not until Justin Lin calls, like I just said, and Shannon's like, "Yeah, here it is." They look at it. They go, "Hey, we should do something with this." They go, "Okay." So then they bring in, you know, a showrunner, Jonathan Tropper. They bring in Danielle Woodrow, who's working with Justin Lin at the time. And then they start pitching it. Then they pitch it to Cinemax, which is, you know, under the HBO umbrella. And then they go, "Great, let's do it." You know, and this doesn't happen in a month. This is happening over years, okay? And then they finally go to casting, right? Finally, that's the last step. And I auditioned for it in 2017, okay? This project started probably decades before I was born. And somehow, some way, in 2017, I was not only available, I was in LA, I auditioned for it, they called me back, they made me read for Bolo, and then we book it, okay? A project that was started 40, 50 years before I was, before this date. So when you ask me about a higher being and manifestation and all that stuff, I always tell people, my whole life, my martial arts career started with Bruce Lee. I told my mom after I saw Enter the Dragon, I want to do that at the age of 4. Maybe I didn't say it like that, but I said, "Hey, I want to do that." Okay. So she enrolls me in Taekwondo at the age of 4 because of Bruce Lee. Okay. Why do I want to learn nunchucks? Why do I want to learn web? Because of Bruce Lee. Why do I want to learn Wing Chun, Jeet Kune Do? Because of Bruce Lee. Okay. Why do I have certain mentalities, certain philosophies throughout my whole life? Because of Bruce Lee. Okay. By no means was I ever like, "Oh, you know what? I'm doing this so eventually in 2017, when they cast, I'm going to be ready for a show." There's no way. Okay. In 2016, months before I auditioned, there was no way. Like, I was like, "Oh yeah, this is going to happen." But by what I'm saying is like, by me just putting out whatever I got from Bruce at a young age, and replicating it in a respectful way of how I want to live my life and how I want to look up to him and his teachings and just respect, right? I feel like this was the way of universe saying, you know what? This is all going to come back. Because there's no, I had no intel whatsoever of this project before I auditioned for it. Okay? Like, this was meant to be. I've told Shannon, I've told Justin, I've told Jonathan, I've told everyone. I feel like I've been preparing my whole life to do this role. And there's no way to explain it. I mean, it's just meant to be.
So when you auditioned and got the call, you didn't even know that this was a Bruce Lee created.
I think I knew Bruce Lee Entertainment was associated with it. I didn't know the detailed background of the original treatment or any of the historical facts of that. I just knew it was a Bruce Lee Entertainment piece that they were behind, that they were backing. People always think like every Bruce Lee remake or whatever that Bruce Lee Entertainment, aka the family, they support. They don't always. They're very selective, but I knew that this one was. So to me, that was very significant. But I also thought it was weird because they wanted me for Bolo, which has a history with me as well. Like being the only Asian kid on an all black football team when I was young and being the biggest Asian kid, like naturally they're like, dude, it's Bolo, right? And then when I was in college at Yale.
You're referring to Bolo Young?
Bolo Young. Of course, 100%. There's only one Bolo, okay? Like, I may play Bolo. There's only one Bolo. That's Bolo Young, okay? All respect given to the original Bolo. But even at Yale, people used to call me Chung Lee and, like, kind of make fun of me in a good way just because to them, you know, I was really big in college as far as physicality. And, you know, I was a product of just doing Olympic lifts and being a football player, right? But then they're like, dude, he's like Bolo. He's like Chung Lee. You know, and I always was like, all right, shut up. You know, like, I get it, dude. I get it, right? So I've always had this weird past with him as well. You know, I never met him, but just the character. So when both worlds collided, you know, with the Bolo and then the Bruce Lee for Warrior, and then they wanted me for Bolo, and they kept his name, Bolo, in the script. You know, it wasn't, like, supposed to be written for Bolo Young, and then they changed it. So it was like, no, it was written for Bolo Young, and it was for Bolo. In 2017, and they still have that same name. I'm like, what is going on? You know? And I actually thought it was too weird to be good, too weird to be true, aka too good to be true. So I kind of forgot about it after the second tape I did for them. And then like a week later, we got the call. And they're like, they would love to have you as Bolo. And I'm like, oh my God. Like this is crazy.
There are so many coincidences in there that it's hard to think that this is an accident.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing. More coincidence being is Justin Lin is one of the directors on my short list that I've always wanted to work with just because he's phenomenal. Like, I wanted to be in Justin Lin's world, you know, and that was always a goal of mine too. And I had previously watched Banshee on Cinemax, and it was like, whoever came up with this show is like sick. Like this material is crazy in a good way, obviously. Jonathan Tropper. And then I'm sitting with Bruce Lee's blood daughter. You know? And they're like, thank you so much for being here. I'm like, what? Did you just thank me? Like, no. Like, I can't believe I'm here. Like, this isn't royalty. This is bigger than royalty to me. This Bruce Lee's blood. That's Justin Lin. That's Jonathan Tropper. It's Daniel Woodrow. Like, what is going on? And they're just like excited to have me in the room. I'm like, humbled is not. You can't even say that. It's a word that doesn't exist. That feeling. And today, it's still in me. It still like exists. You know, because I don't think that experience with Warrior or that whole process or just the fact that I'm connected to Bruce Lee, like I'm literally connected to him through one of his pieces. That trips me out. Like, it's so awesome, yet I can't get excited about it because I don't believe it really. You know what I mean? It's weird, you know? But again, back to the original point is, that's why I believe there's this path that's been written and this story that's been written for me. Because, you know, as much as you know about me personally, there is too much coincidence. There is, I don't call it luck either. It's coincidence, you know? And other people would be like, oh, like I was lucky he was there. Lucky that. Like, no, like it's bigger than that. You know, because and that's why, again, I think in the beginning, this business breaks you down as a person because it's so critical, right? And actors were always faced with criticism, with, you know, not looking good enough, not being right enough, not, you know, whatever it is, right? But Hollywood had to break me down. But in building me back up, this is where I believe that every job I've been cast for and will be cast for is meant to be. There's plenty of jobs that I am I am that guy. Description wise, audition wise, character, I am that guy. And they go with something completely different. And I'm able to let those go where I couldn't before. So I'd be like, what are they doing? Right. And it's because I've just developed this strong self-confidence in the process. Everyone always talks about like, enjoy the process, right? Yeah, I'm finally enjoying the process. I have been for a while. But again, easier said than done, you know, because everything I've done has been meant to be. So
yeah,
you may have
that's amazing.
You may have a project and you're like, oh my God, this sounds like Rich. And then I may not get it. You know, you'd be like, ah, we may go that way. You know what I mean? I'll be like, I'm not gonna be mad at you and be like, no, wasn't meant to be.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm so happy for you. That gave me goosebumps hearing that all this serendipity.
Yeah.
The stars aligning and now, you know, Bruce Lee, your childhood hero god, as you have described him, you know, and now you're so connected in that way. And it may not be the end of that story either.
Yes. But
that's a great example of preparation meeting opportunity.
Yes.
Because the universe will move in the direction you want if you take the actions and to help it.
Totally. Right?
It's got to know your intention behind it and that you will help yourself also. And I think that's what happened here.
No, I think it is happening. It will and it continues because you can't lie to the universe. I'm able to lie to you, right? But the universe knows what my intent is. It knows what my passion is, you know? And so, you know, that's why I always say, again, Bruce Lee, he's, you know, he's been a lifelong idol to me. And one of his famous quotes is, running water never grows stale. So you just got to keep on flowing. And I don't want to give my dad too much credit because he said something similar to that. But in his terms, he was just like, just don't stop working. That's what my dad said. So maybe if I had to write a paper on this, I could somehow like make that work, right? It's like, oh, my dad's just like Bruce Lee. Anyways, you know, growing up with that mentality, it's the truth though. You know, so even at times of my lowest lows of like when there was just so many, there's more question marks than anything else. I was like, I just got to keep working. I got to keep what I can control. I got to keep doing, which is mental health, physical health, emotional health. Surround yourself with good people. Be a good person. Grind hard, train hard, because that's all I can control.
And forget about what you can't control.
Exactly. Because as long as I do that, then I'm never going to be stale, which means I'm always going to be ready. That's why I never have to, like, honestly, this is not arrogance. I never have to get ready because I'm always preparing to shoot right now. I'm always preparing to drop into character right now. And that's just how I live. And that's just not as an actor. Like, this is like football was life, basketball was life, baseball, martial arts was life. Like, you know, whatever that goal was, I lived it every day, you know? So that's when I read that quote from Bruce, like, I don't know how long ago. It just really stuck because it's so true. Whatever's going around in the world, as long as you're flowing, as long as you're training, as long as you're working, as long as you're being productive, then everything will be fine from what your intent is. And only the universe knows that intent.
Awesome. Well, we're always growing.
Yeah.
You've hit some initial goals. What are your new goals?
New goals? Oh, I have so many. You know, it's like anything else. You know, you get to this level, you get to this platform, you have new goals, higher goals.
Well, give me the highest goal, not the middle goal.
The highest goal? Actors in the business will understand this one. My highest goal is to be able to have a consistent working schedule for the next 25 years. That's the highest goal. Meaning I know what my job's gonna be every month, every year. which is basically unrealistic, but that's why it's a goal. I think the hardest part of doing what I do is having and keeping a schedule, because a lot of us, we don't know what the next project's going to be. We don't know where it's going to be. And when we look at 2020, right, with COVID, we don't even know what the world's going to be. So I've always been, people always ask, do you want to do film? Do you want to do features? Do you want to do network? Do you want to do cable? Do you want to do streaming? Here, I just want that schedule. Of course, you know, when we get down to it, it's going to be, is it the right character? Is it the right fit? Is it the right show? But I think having that schedule is a luxury in our business. Being like, hey, Jay, we should go on a trip. You know, I'm free August. You know, I can't say that. I've never been able to say that. You know, because even on my off time, we're trying to do something else. You know, meaning my team and another project.
Either unemployed or about to be unemployed.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, of course, that's by my choice. You know, no one's forced, not someone's like, hey, in order to do this, you got, you know, no, that's my choice. I can tap out whenever I want, right? But that's also why it keeps me flowing. You know what I mean? Because I never know. And as I get older, my stamina, my resilience has also gotten better. And my patience has gotten extremely better. Because it's a waiting game, you know, and I think my biggest hang up right now is when I am on a show, when I am on a film, I always think of when it's going to finish. And that helps me enjoy every second, but I'm always like trying to tell myself, don't think of it. Don't think 5 months from now. Don't think, you know, 6 months from now. Think right now.
Stay present.
And I, it's weird. I've trained myself to be present. But in the back of my head, I think I've turned that negative of like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next into a positive, which is because I don't know what's going to happen next. I'm going to enjoy right now at the most I can, the most I can. And I think that's why the reward when we do book things in this business is so rewarding, because it's not easy. It's not easy at all, you know? So that's the long-term goal.
Excellent. Is there an actor whose career you'd like to emulate?
There's a few, actually, if I can get away with that. You know, one, I'm a huge Don Cheadle fan. Loved his work. I think I originally got kind of attached to him because I found out about his academic background. And he's been around. He's an intelligent man. He has multiple degrees, and I just found a connection there that I respected. And then obviously love him on camera and all the different roles that he's played. I love his versatility. Michael Peña, love him. Seeing where he started and where he's now, he more so, I feel, is a role model for me, because he could be so easily stereotyped as a Latin man for Latin roles only. And yet he's been in everything, playing different roles, playing roles that I know weren't specifically for, or when they wrote it, they were like, we're going to write this for Michael Peña. I know that. And to see what he's done with these roles, it's mind-blowing. Just because I feel like I know that little bit behind the scenes of some of these things. And I'm like, God, he's so fantastic. You know, and he's so gooey. He can just morph. He could be that hardcore guy. He could be that soft guy. Be that military guy. Be that loving dad. Like, he's just great. I love that. Those two guys have always been on my radar. Just because, I don't know why. To be honest, I don't. I just saw them. I just became interested. Like, of course, like, you know, I love The Rock. He's, you know, a blockbuster superstar. He's got great personality. I respect everything he's done. You know, obviously, you know, people like Brad Pitt, you know what I mean? Just, you know, George Clooney. But as far as people that I feel a special connection with, I would say those two guys for sure.
Yeah. All of them amazing actors. It's hard, especially those first two.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard not to be a fan.
Yeah, just, and then I think to, you know, as a person of color, obviously, too, it's like, you know, in this day and age, like, I see how easily those guys could have been boxed in. Mm. And they're like, no, you're only for this role. You know, this is only your casting. Mm-hmm. And yet they've gone outside this box in like this crazy way. You know what I mean? And yeah, like Michael Peña, like, you know, I'll be watching a movie that I don't even know he's in. And I'll be like, there he is playing this random character. And he's great in it. And he's fabulous. And I'm just like, God, like I want to be able to do that, you know, where I just, like I said, I just love both of their versatility, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah.
Are there any type of roles that you've always wanted to play but haven't had the opportunity yet?
Oh, yes. You know, people close to me, like my friends and stuff, they've always, I don't think so, but they're like, dude, you're funny. And I'm like, no, I'm not. You know, like I'm just honest is what I tell people. Like, I'm not funny. I'm honest. You know, I don't really like, I just say it like it is. And, that's something I would like. I've never thought of it till recently. Like I'm talking, like, you know, last couple of years that, you know, I train a lot in comedy. People see me, you know, I've been kind of categorized in, you know, as more of an like action kind of person or deep drama. Like, you know, I did Man in the High Castle. It's really a heavy, heavy, heavy show. You know, and not so much action, but just the character. You know, it was just heavy, heavy character. But in real life, I'm really not like that. You know, I don't feel like I'm a violent guy. Like, I don't go around like, you know, with an axe and slicing people up, you know, and I'm not like, you know, this heavy, heavy kind of personality. Like I really feel like I'm easygoing. You know, I'm pretty private, to be honest. Like, I don't really like, you know, put myself out there as much as I should. But people that do know me, they're like, dude, you're funny. And I'm like, no, I'm not. They're like, you should try comedy. I'm like, no, I'm not. You know what I mean? So, you know, in doing that, I just said, you know, I've heard it my whole life that I was like, oh, maybe I should start training more in the comedy world. And so, you know, last few years, that's where my, you know, my actor studio training has taken me, is, and not being like the funny guy, but just into the comedy world, into that rom-com world, you know, and being, you know, because I am a hopeless romantic, like, you know, only certain people would know that. But I'm a soft guy, you know, when you really get to know me. I just happen to come off a certain way on camera. Right. And so that's how, you know, the fans and everyone else that follows me, they're like, oh, that must be like, you know, he must be like that. So I definitely
be intense on camera.
When you pay me, I can be intense on camera. Is it my choice? No. Like, I rather like, you know, I want to be the dad on Home Improvement. You know what I mean? Like, I want to like wear a flannel and kick back and like, you know, say funny things. But that's somewhere I'd love to go. You know what I mean? I'd love to venture off into the sitcom or, you know, just kind of like a dry comedy world. But at the end of the day, you know, I love being a leading man, you know, and wherever that heading takes me, that category takes me, you know, whether it's being a warrior or whether it's being like, you know, the rom-com husband, you know, I want to be that leading man guy. And that's what I train in a lot. You know, you get the violent stuff for free. Yeah.
Well, that's a new challenge for you then.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly what, that's why I always say I'm a student. You know, it's just weird because I think it's like my bad karma, because when I was really young, he used to tell my dad, like, I hate school. He's like, man, you're going to be studying for the rest of your life. I remember when he told me that, it freaked me out because I just thought like, oh, after college, I don't have to study, right? And I think this is all karma coming back because, you know, I picked one of the only careers in which you will always be a student. You know what I mean? Like, that's my goal, at least, you know, because I would be scared if someone's like, hey, you know, sensei, what should I? I'm like, dude, I don't know. Like, I'm still a student. Like, don't come at me like that. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I really love learning. I've just been through too many experiences when I know when you're most uncomfortable is probably when it's the best for you.
And, truth.
Yeah, and it's taken a lot of really uncomfortable experiences for me to realize that. And I'm grateful for that. And
that's the only way to grow.
Yeah. And I think 2020 was very uncomfortable for a lot of people. So I feel like a lot of people may understand that, me saying this now, you know. But that's kind of just the general philosophy I have. But we'll see. We'll see.
What's your favorite movie and why?
My favorite movie, I'll say the why first. The why is because of, I think, where I saw this film, the theater, the city, where I was in my life. So it's my favorite movie because of that contextual setting, right? Because, I mean, there's so many great movies out there. And when watching this, like, I don't want them to judge me, be like, what? Like, why that movie? But yeah, I think it was The Notebook, because I'm a huge Ryan Gosling fan. I should have mentioned him when you asked me the other question about who are like the actors I look up to.
Oh, add that to the list.
Yeah, the big Ryan Gosling fan. But I think, you know, when it comes down to it, I saw The Notebook and it was so, I don't think I was prepared for that subject matter at that age that I saw it. And it just affected me, you know. It just, the story affected me. You know, how his character affected me, how he spent his life, like, dedicated to, like, the love of his life. And, like, he built the dream house. He wrote this girl letters, even though he never got a reply. You know, it was like this struggle. And I was like, man, like, this dude is a good guy. Like, I got mad at the girl. You know what I mean? I was like, do you know what he's going? You know, because she came from a privileged background. She had money. She went off to do other things. I think she was engaged or something, you know, to another guy. And meanwhile, this blue collar guy lost everything and was just fulfilling a promise, right? Of his first love. Like, again, call me a hopeless romantic, but man, that thing affected me, you know? And I was like, I took away from it, like, how much of a man this guy was, you know, because nowadays, I think we throw around that term, like, I'm a man, you know, like Coach Gundy, I'm a man, talk to me, right? Like, but, you know, what is a man, right? I think if Ryan Gosling's character had friends, a lot of friends, they would make fun of him in that time. Like, what are you doing, man? Like, you're an idiot, you know, but he was so, I think the commitment, the love, the accountability, and then he did it. I think that was the big thing. He did it. Like, a lot of people say they're going to do things, you know, but he built the house, and that's so symbolic. Like, he built the house, you know what I mean? And that scene where, like, she drives up and she looks at it, I was like, yo. And then she, like, goes back. She's like, oh, I got to think. Like, you know what I mean? I was like, are you nuts? Like, he's too good for you. Like, you don't deserve him. But yet he was so, because she was like the first love, he was like, no, like, this is why I did it. You know, and then that scene, he gets all mad at her. He's like, you never wrote me back. And she's like, I never got it, you know? And then she realizes, like, the mom obviously took the letters away. Oh, dude. Wow. You know, it just the emotion and the dedication, you know? So when I say that, you know, I think maybe some people be like, oh, that's corny. The Notebook, dude, come on, right? But no, it wasn't just about, like, The Notebook. Mm-hmm. It was about Ryan Gosling's character as a man, you know, and how committed and loyal that guy was.
Yeah, knowing you, and especially through this conversation where, you know, now I know you even on a deeper level, that the, like you said, the commitment and the sense of integrity,
yes,
surrounding this is probably what I feel really drew you to that movie.
Yeah, because I was so young when I watched it too. That's why it felt weird, because I was like, why am I so affected by this? You know, it'd be different if I watched it now, you know, or like, you know, like now I approach every film, you know, differently, any show differently. You know, it's like, the only thing I compare it to is like when people found out like I was going to law school, lawyer friends of mine and other like 2Ls and 3Ls that were already in law school, they'd be like, oh, the first semester, it's going to change the way you see everything. And I was like, what does that mean? You know what I mean? And sure enough, first semester of law school, you look at every situation differently through a legal lens, right? So now it's kind of unfair because, you know, I train the way I train, you know, as an actor, so that I rarely can just sit back and enjoy something. I'm always looking at it at a different angle than I think the normal viewer is, right? So I think that movie, had I seen it later in my acting career, would have affected me differently. But just, I was, like you said, now we're tying in other stuff, a beginner, right? I think when I saw it, I was such a beginner. I was so fresh. I was so naive. I was so ignorant that it affected me in ways that I would love a movie to affect me now. But unfortunately now, because I'm looking at it in so many different ways, I don't know if a movie can affect me like that, the way it affected me when I was that age, you know? Yeah. And so that's why when you say, what's your favorite movie? I would change to say, what's the most impactful movie, right? And hence, that's my favorite movie, because I now can analyze it, me now today, being like, wow, like it was so organic and fresh and how it made me feel and how it moved me. You know, now I look at stuff for certain things. I'm like, ooh, the photography on this is phenomenal. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, that, you know, this character choice is is great, you know? Yeah. But
I understand that too, because I think that I watch movies that way too. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the technical stuff. I look at the lighting.
Yeah.
And the angles and, you know, the actors and their performances.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if I watch it, take a pass watching it that way, on the second pass, I think I'm more able to just immerse myself in the story.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, let that stuff go. So maybe that's the way you have to approach it. I'm totally down with you with the, you know, in law school is the same thing. You think differently.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. Things
it's not a bad thing at all. You know, it's just a different, it's just different, you know?
Yeah.
But now just, you know, I don't think I've ever told anyone what I just told you about The Notebook, but just thinking about it and reliving that now, I'm kind of jealous of experiencing that film how I did, because I want that. I want that back, you know what I mean? Because it was just so fresh. And it's funny because, you know, now as actors, you know, again, maybe I'm only speaking for myself, but I clock things all the time, you know? Like the real stuff that happens to me, like the oddest things. You know, it's like if I hear something on the street when I'm driving by and I react to it, like I clock that almost like an out of body being like, how did I look at that? Because that was so unexpected. Or how did I react to that? You know, or like, you know, recently my little dog passed away and it was one of the most emotional things I've ever been through. And I've been through a lot, but for some reason, my dog dying, it was just like really difficult for me. And obnoxiously, I was mourning, but yet clocking how I was mourning my dog, because that's gold. You know what I mean? Because that's real. And because I fortunately haven't been in that situation, you know, recently, you know, where like I'm super saddened by a death of someone or something close to me, that's gold. That's a gift. You know what I mean? Because now I have something to pull from my past. But yet I was clocking it in the moment. And I got mad at myself for that. Because I'm just like, how can you be so selfish to clock and like watch yourself from an outside point of view while you're mourning your dog? You know what I mean? But that's just my training. I can't help that. You know, that's what this whole process has done to me. You know what I mean? So I think of watching The Notebook for a second, then I think of like my dog passing away recently. And it sucks, because I think had I not chosen my career and my dog passed away, I would probably not remember anything from that day. Just that it sucked, you know?
Yeah, but I don't think that's a bad thing. It's just a matter of you're more self-aware.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I like to tell myself, so I feel better about myself. I'm like, I'm just more self-aware.
I validated that for you.
Appreciate that, you know? But yeah, I think, you know, talking about The Notebook and all that, it just really... God, it's crazy reflection, you know, on how...
Do you feel like you're in therapy?
A little bit, but it's good. I'm going to be a better guy once I get out of here.
All right.
So I'm going to be balanced.
Glad to help.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I'll send you my bill.
I was going to say, send me the bill. I was just going to say.
That's awesome. Well, if there was a moral to your story up to this point, and you're just getting started...
Yes.
What would that be?
I think I touched on it a little bit with my Bruce Lee quote, which is, you know, running water never grows stale. So you got to keep on flowing. Because that's kind of been my life motivation, you know, to sum it up in such a beautifully written expression like that, is that it's okay to not know. You know, it's okay not to be sure of what you're going to do. It's okay to be a high school kid and be like, I don't know what I want to, where I want to go to college, let alone being in college and being like, I don't know what I want to major in. Or even more extreme, like, I don't know what grad school or what professional. It's okay. You know what I mean? I think both you and I understand that. And I always think rushing leads to really bad decisions. It's as simple as like, what do you want to eat tonight? I don't know. Let's just pick something. And you get, oh, I don't want this. You know what I mean? It can be that simple. I think, you know, we've talked about so many points around this in this interview today that I think just having fear of the unknown, you need to embrace it because that's a gift. People look at it as it's like intimidation or it's like, oh my gosh, I'm failing because I don't know, right? Oh, you don't know? No, I don't know. Oh, you're an idiot, right? No, I think that's great when you don't know. I think it's awesome. And I think you need to grasp that and you need to actually cherish that moment. Because here's the flip of that. When you know, it kind of can be boring. Like, yeah, I know, you know? It's like, well, I don't know. I don't know, you know? Like, I'm telling you that right now because I don't even know about myself right now, about what my next project. I know what the next project, I don't know what the next project is. But I love it because it's going to fuel me. It's going to keep me going. I'm not worried I'm going to lose. People are like, oh, man, I'm getting old. Like, I don't know if I got it anymore, right? That's not, I'm never my concern because I don't know. You know what I mean? So that fire is always going to burn, if not bigger. So, you know, to people our age, to people that are in like, you know, when I was, like I said, when I was in college, I didn't know. And it ruined me. I used to stress all the time. Like, I got to pick something. I'm going to major in this, but I'm going to do pre-med. I kind of want to go to law school. I kind of want to get my MBA. I kind of want to act. Right? Where I should have just been like, this is great. Because the guy right next to me that's like, I want to be an investment banker, I'm going to talk to him in 10 years, see how that's working out. You know what I mean? See if he's balding and see if he's aged 50 years. Okay? But I didn't know that. So, you know, people also ask me a similar question. Where like, what would you tell your younger self, right? And I would say the same thing, which embrace the unknown. Because that's like I said, I say it again, that's gold, dude. That's a gift. You know what I mean? And you're not going to understand that till you get old, but just enjoy it, man. Like, enjoy. You know, it goes with everything, you know, in life. You know, like, I need to get a house. I need to get married. I need to have kids. Like, great. You can do all that. Don't rush, you know? And if you don't know, love that. You know, so to any kid out there who's feeling peer pressure because their best friend knows, I would laugh at the friend who knows and be like, good luck with that. You know what I mean? Because I didn't know and I still don't know, but I'm just going to keep flowing and see what happens.
Flow like water.
I think that's how I can answer that and sum it up. That's a very complex question with a lot of different answers, but embrace the unknown, be fearless, and just, you know, stay true to your core and your values.
Well, I think it was very well said.
Thank you.
Rich, I want to thank you for sharing with me today. Man, it really revealed a lot about you in a good way. I think I like you even more.
Great. Fantastic. So you can send me that bill still, and I'll take care of it.
I'll take 10% off for you.
Hey, whatever you can do. I love it.
Right on. Well, tell us where we can find out more about you. Social media, what have you.
Social media, all platforms, Rich Ting World. So.
Website?
Website, richtingworld.com.
Excellent. All right, Rich. I want to thank you again. Appreciate it. Hope you'll come back.
Definitely. No, thanks for spending time with me and asking. Thanks for being interested. I appreciate that, you know.
You're an interesting guy.
If you say so. So, I, you know, again, thank you for the time. And just thank you for the questions. You know, it's just, I love it. Like, again, the unknown, right? I didn't know what you're going to ask me. And the fact that you asked me stuff that, you know, I've really never been questioned on. It's fantastic. So I appreciate the conversation.
Me too. Thank you. All right, Rich.